Future-proof extra.
With Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
On News Talk.
Now, there's an on-running debate as to whether or not we've begun the Anthropocene and are at the point of the planet's sixth mass extinction. Certainly, many of us can agree that we're not at a great place. So what can we learn from the previous five times that life faced world-altering events? Well, Mike Benton is Professor of Vertebrate Paleontology at University of Bristol and author of Extinctions, How Life Survives, Adapts and Evolves. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Mike.
Yeah, hello. Great to see you.
We've had five mass extinctions over history. Is that correct? How do we know that for sure?
Yeah, so I think most people would agree that there's a so-called big five mass extinctions. The one that everybody has heard about is the extinction of the dinosaurs 66 million years ago. That was the last of the big five. And there were a number of other similar events millions and millions of years before that. And each one had a huge effect on not only killing life, but enabling a whole new sort of rebirth of life on Earth. But there are two debate points, I guess. One is these events are of different sizes, and so there are many smaller events, and some people would like to promote them to the big five or the big six. And the other interesting point is what's going on at the present time, and many people have called what's happening right now the sixth extinction, and this is why it's the sixth.
Before we get into how we recognize an extinction, how do we know there weren't more?
Yeah, well, we know of other times when lots of life disappeared. So, I mean, the definition of a mass extinction is when a large number of species, maybe 50% of species on the Earth, disappear apparently at the same time, and that they are of diverse ecologies, so marine, terrestrial, large and small.
That sounds like a very fuzzy definition.
Yeah, it's pretty fuzzy, and we'd like something a bit sharper, but I'm afraid each one is a singularity, you know, each one is its own story, and it's not possible to give a sharper definition. And then there's a whole kind of sliding scale to smaller scale events.
Right. So a lot of these extinctions have similar mechanisms, right? Except for the last one, the dinosaur one.
Yeah, that's right. And I think most people have an image of the dinosaurs buzzing around on the Earth, doing their thing, thundering through the undergrowth and tearing down trees. And then the great asteroid hits the Earth, the giant rock from space, and boom, they're gone. And at one time, colleagues in the field, professionals, were thinking, maybe this is the general model. Maybe we can find that this applies to others. But in fact, that's not the case. And the others seem to have been driven by global warming, driven by volcanic eruptions, which is a very different kind of model.
Let's go through the global warming model first. These typically happen because of giant supervolcano eruptions, usually calderas, that eject an enormous amount of carbon dioxide and methane into the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, that's right. And we're all familiar with volcanic eruptions, at least from TV. We see things going on in Iceland, in Hawaii, and other parts of the world. And some of the eruptions are big explosive things with pointy volcanoes like Vesuvius and Etna. Others like Iceland are fissure eruptions where there's a crack in the Earth's crust and up comes the lava. And the real killer, or the reason that some of these can kill worldwide, is not so much the lava, because, of course, that only has a local impact, and eventually it solidifies, and that's that. It's the, as you mentioned, the carbon dioxide and methane, which are pumped out in huge volumes. And the scale of the volcano will determine the size. You know, the supervolcano can have a worldwide effect. And no human being in recorded history has seen such an enormous eruption. Some people may know about Krakatoa in the 1800s, which did have a global effect. It happened in Indonesia, but on the other side of the world, in Europe, people didn't know until a few days later when the telegraph messages got through. But it did affect the world because it threw up a lot of dust and changed the color of the sunsets, and you know, things were noted. But that wasn't big enough to cause this kind of level of extinction.
Yeah. In human history, we haven't seen the sort of event that we're talking about here, where it's so cataclysmic that it literally changes the temperature of the Earth. The question I have is that we're told that carbon dioxide doesn't go away, that it, you know, that we keep adding to it, that that's a problem because it stays there. How come these global warming events that have happened through time haven't resulted in a sort of a permanent base level where life does not exist.
It's because you're quite right that carbon dioxide and methane stay around in the atmosphere for a long time, but not forever. And the Earth system adjusts. And one of the simplest things is that plant life can mop up carbon dioxide in the normal processes of photosynthesis. So I think when we're thinking about the present day, of course, we're concerned about, oh my goodness, what's happening month by month or year by year. I'm a geologist, so a million years is nothing. And these ancient events are kind of, they string out. We may say something is quite rapid, by which we mean less than a million years, but that is too much. But it's important to realize, you're right, that there's a residence time and it takes a long time for forests or for plankton in the oceans to grow up and expand their capability of mopping up the CO2. And it's so the normal processes keep the carbon moving, keep the oxygen moving.
Mm.
And it's just when you perturb it that knocks it sideways for quite a while.
There are several branches of animal and plant that we now have today that we can, obviously trace back to the beginning of life. Luca, the last universal common ancestor. But there are presumably entire branches of species that were cut off during at least one or two of these extinctions. Do we have any record of a sort of a dead end that was caused by extinctions?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And this is one of the reasons I love being a paleontologist, because we get to look into these weird and wonderful organisms of the past. So, I mean, one example, obviously dinosaurs would be a commonplace example. And you could say, my goodness, these are utterly weird and amazing. We know, of course, that the smaller meat-eating ones are related to modern birds. And if you look at one of those little creatures less than a meter long, many of them indeed had feathers. You can see, that's not so different. But if you wind back further, there were creatures that some people may be familiar with, trilobites. They were very important in the oceans of the Paleozoic, and they totally disappeared 250 million years ago at the end of the Permian. And there was a group that really dominated the ocean floor. They were arthropods. They looked like a kind of overgrown woodlouse, anything from the size of a boiled egg up to maybe half a meter in length. And they were quite flat and they ran around with lots of legs under the body, so like a millipede or a centipede. And boom, they're gone. And they're eventually replaced by crabs and lobsters. And I guess if you go further back in the pre-Cambrian, this is more than 500 million years ago, there were really strange creatures. Some of them we hardly know. Are they plants or animals or what? In the Ediacaran time, this is the first diversification of visible animals, things you can actually see that are not microscopic. And some of those were weird, sort of like quilts or duvets. They were kind of stitched bags, and people struggle to understand, are any of them related to modern forms? Could some of them, people try to say, well, maybe that's like a worm, or that's like a jellyfish. And then others say, no, this is just a totally alien diversification of life 600-700 million years ago, and they just disappeared completely to be replaced eventually by the modern group. So there are some otherworldly creatures that we can find out about, and they often do leave good fossils.
Before we talk about the survivors, what happens with an extinction event in terms of the species that are destroyed? How quickly do they go? Mm. And is it just a habitat change, or can they not survive with the level of oxygen in the air? Or what is it that kills off these species?
I think there's the two models, the impact, and I'll just say a brief word about that, and then the volcanic type model. So the impact, which finished the dinosaurs, and in the oceans it finished lots of the marine reptiles and the ammonites and so on, that was associated with cooling, because the way the impact kills is it hits the Earth, it throws up a huge amount of dust, that blankets around the globe and blocks out the sun. And that's why we get the cooling, because you not only lose the light, but the warmth of the sun. And that has a big effect, because many animals in particular rely on a certain amount of warmth. And therefore, if everything goes kind of freezing, even if it's quite quick, we think this was quite a quick event. Maybe things started to get better after a month or two. But nonetheless, a sort of sharp freezing episode could kind of kill a lot of life in the oceans and on land. the other extinction events caused by warming, the key killers in those were the warming, but also acid rain, because one of the things that happens if you pump a lot of gases into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide, methane, yes, but there was also sulfur dioxide, which mixing with water and oxygen gives you sulfuric acid. So we're familiar with acid rain today, you know, downwind of factory, old-fashioned coal-burning factories and so on. And the acid, it kills the trees. We understand that because obviously it strips the leaves and, you know, it's just not very friendly. But not only that, it washes out the nutrients from the soil. So if you have acid rain on a forest, the trees will die and they'll get washed away and the whole thing is just devastated. And
yeah.
So it's that combination of warming, which has a slow regional effect because, for example, at the end of the Permian, the biggest of these mass extinctions, temperatures went up about 10 degrees, which in the tropics is absolutely lethal because it means you're going from 25 or 30, which is quite a nice warm temperature that we'd be familiar with, up to 35 or 40, which is just a killer for any life. But they have a chance to move away. And in moving away, they can get into better conditions. But then, of course, there's competition or crowding. But the acid rain would actually create rocky landscapes. So, and they would be quite long-lasting for reasons like we discussed before. The CO2 and methane hang about in the atmosphere for quite a long time, a matter of years, tens of years. But that devastated rocky landscape would take a long time for nutrients and soil to come back, and obviously until you have the plant growth, it's difficult for animals. So it's a sort of double-edged killer.
It's crazy to me to think that we didn't always have plants on land, and yet we didn't. Are they a result of one of these mass extinctions? Because I kind of think of these extinction events as sort of like a pinch, that you have so many different species and such diversity, and then this pinch happens, and a few animals slip through, and they become almost like origin species once again and diversify in many ways. Is that sort of how it works?
Yeah, in a lot of occasions. So the easy one, I'll come back to the plants in a second. The easy one we all think about, of course, is when the dinosaurs disappeared, the mammals had their chance. And we're mammals, and therefore we look back at that and think, thank goodness for that. The world would be full of dinosaurs. We wouldn't be here. To a large extent, that's right. I think actually there are some other times, though, when big diversifications happen. And I think the move of plants onto land was one of those which wasn't really connected with any extinction event, but simply by the fact that they had evolved a remarkable new set of adaptations that allowed them to grow up into the air and get away from the water. The very first land plants had their feet in the water still, their kind of roots in the water. And it took a long time. It was a kind of slow process. And after tens of millions of years, a few of the plants actually had roots that we would recognize. And the plants themselves generate the soil. If you think of the way mosses can grow on rocks, bare rocks, you think, how can that be? But the moss is a plant. It's somehow getting minerals and water. But then it begins to make a bit of soil. And if you think of tramping across the countryside, and then grass will grow. And so that's how we envisage life would have got onto land. It doesn't seem to have been a response to a mass extinction event.
Right. So let's talk about now then. Do you think we're in a period of mass extinction? Given that fuzzy definition, you could argue yes and no.
You're right. And I think most people would agree, yes, you know, each of the events is different, but the loss of species, the alteration of habitats is on a scale with many of these previous events. And bearing in mind that issue of timescales, you know, we're human, we think in timescales of weeks and months and years, and geologists are thinking in terms of thousands or millions of years. But even so, I think the rate of loss of species at the moment is really very high. People can calculate this based on historical records. You know, we know from Europe different mammals have disappeared. These go back to the very earliest days of humans, mammoths and woolly rhinos. But coming towards the present, there's been a greater loss, and particularly on tropical islands and coral reefs and so on. So the rate of loss of species corresponds to some of these geological events. Right. And so, yeah, I think we are.
Not to always end on an upbeat, but It is fair to say that these extinction events can also lead to creative adaptations. Isn't that right? And I'm wondering, is that possible in such a short space of time? And yeah. We talk about climate change on a human level happening so quickly that animals won't adapt. Are there animals and species that will always adapt no matter what it is, whether it's a nuclear Armageddon or, 3.5 degrees on the climate change scale? Are there always going to be ways of planets of this planet to survive when it comes to life?
Yeah. So I think, yes, we know that there are certain kinds of species that tend to survive, and it's good to know what the rules of survival are during a crisis. It's good to have a mixed diet. Humans are okay on that. We tick the box. It's good to be spread worldwide, not just living in one little patch, one island, whatever. Humans tick the box there. It's good, though, to be small. So people look at cockroaches and rats as great survivors. We're a bit big. But of course, humans have the advantage that we can adapt our living conditions. We can heat or air condition. We can do stuff to enable us to survive in difficult situations. So we can use technological ingenuity to help us to survive. But those general rules help us to understand, oh, yeah, I see, of course, the dodo, famously lived on one island in the Indian Ocean. That was it. Not a great plan if you hope to survive.
No.
It only took, human arrivals, rats and cats and bloody blood, off they go, sadly. And there are lots of vulnerable species today where the fear is any perturbation will just knock them out. They're just kind of teetering on the brink. And this has always been the case. I think the creativity, this is again back to the timescales. We can look in the past, and this is one of the themes of my book, is, yes, as you alluded to earlier, each of the big five was followed by a great diversification of life. We're most familiar with the end Cretaceous, 66 million years ago. That enabled the diversification not only of mammals, but of tropical rainforests. They more or less originate after the dinosaurs. The flowering plants were already there, but then they massively diversified. And modern-type birds and modern-type lizards and many modern-type groups of insects, butterflies and beetles and bloody blah. So loads of things we see as very familiar got their chance, and probably if the extinction hadn't happened, that would not have occurred. But it's the time scale. If we're willing to wait 5 or 10 million years, we will see this glorious future, but probably we will not survive that long.
A sobering thought, I suppose, to end on. Professor Mike Benton is the author of Extinctions: How Life Survives, Adapts and Evolves. Mike, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.